válido de lunes a jueves. You
the Safari Park. You're killing me, Larry.
Larry, fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
Larry. Larry.
This is week two of my escape from California. I've been on the road now for about 9 days, over 2,400 miles. As Greg Allman sang in The Midnight Rider, maybe the greatest road song of all time, the road goes on forever. When we last gathered, Moose, guard dog of the Take No Shit Dojo, well, he was in a bad way, suffering cluster seizures. I'm happy to report that he recovered nicely and is back to his old self. What I failed to mention last time was that those seizures don't stop when he falls asleep. They awakened him and us about every 2 hours. Getting on the road the next morning, we all felt like hammered shit. We were just leaving Gallup, New Mexico. Gallup has the bones of greatness. It appears to have been quite the little metropolis before Route 66 was rendered obsolete by Interstate 40. Now it's kind of dreary. First reason is that it's located in the very commie state of New Mexico. Some people are nice. You still see a few rifle racks in the windows of pickups, a few Pro 2A bumper stickers. Gallup seems like a town without much wealth. There's a vibe of gloom and apathy leavened with a sprinkle of animosity. While other states try to court tourists, New Mexico seems to not give a shit. You see road signs about seatbelts or littering, and they're emphasized by the phrase, "It's our law," and the word "our" is in italics. Why not just the law, like everywhere else? Because the not-so-subtle subtext is, this is our place. You're just a visitor. Around bedtime at the Fairfield Inn and Suites, we noticed the water running brown in the sink and shower. That was not the case when we checked in, because before unloading luggage, I always check the room first. Are the beds firm and dried? Is the toilet flushed? Does the sink drain? And is there decent water pressure in the shower? Even in Hiltons and Marriotts, this is not always the case. You have to check to be sure. So with brown water, nobody showered, and we brushed our teeth with bottled water. Ever notice it's just the commie states like Michigan, where something as basic as water becomes a crapshoot? It's because they blow budgets on crap like DEI. Social programs, climate change initiatives, and bike lanes. Like in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Nice little town, but clearly has some issues like economic development. But they got bike lanes on bike lanes with flower-laden islands between the roadbed and the sidewalk, except there are no cyclists using the bike lanes or anywhere, and no pedestrians on the sidewalk. So if there should be a lone cyclist, why not let him or her ride on the empty sidewalk and leave an extra lane for four-wheeled vehicles? Seems like all motel rooms have the same equipment, huh? With things we almost never use, like the coffee maker, television, and telephone. Do people actually still use those things? The microwave comes in handy to heat up Moose's gourmet meals. The refrigerator is nice to have. When I opened this one, it was room temperature. I pushed the on button inside and heard it cycle on, popped in some bottled water. When I checked it a couple hours later, it was still room temperature. When we checked out, I mentioned the brown water and inoperable refrigerator to the desk clerk. She said the water wasn't the hotel's fault. It was a city issue. And what about the warm refrigerator? Well, she had an answer for that, too. She explained it was an eco-friendly model that shuts itself off. Well, I refrained from telling her That's how all refrigerators work, but they still manage to keep stuff cold. But never argue with an ideologue. So the place was really super eco-friendly, huh? No water, no refrigeration. I wonder if the Marriott family's many mansions are equally eco-friendly. Next stop was Santa Fe. That place is picturesque, but has two fatal flaws. One, it's the state capital, which means it's crawling with bureaucrat parasites. I've never visited one capital city that didn't suck, for those same reasons, from Sacramento to Albany to Tallahassee. There's a lot of money in Santa Fe. Plenty of Range Rovers and Porsche SUVs and costume people. What are costume people? Well, I guess you could file them under arrested development. They seem to be much more common in leftist enclaves. They are people who don't dress so much as they wear costumes. They think that if they wear an outfit, they become the person associated with it. In Santa Fe, you see a lot of them strolling around like Clint Eastwood in High Plains Drifter. I saw one guy with a poncho and flat-brimmed hat covering a wispy white doorknob. He even aped the Clint squint. Instead of a cheroot clenched between his teeth, he had a lollipop stick. The man with no name meets Kojak. A whole lot of blue-eyed pale faces walk around like they're Cochise. Billy Jack hats with big feathers in them and buckskin shirts and turquoise bracelets and moccasins. What is the fascination in the Southwest with moccasins, especially some brand called Minnetonkas? You see them at every tourist trap, Minnetonkas. They look like any other bedroom slipper. A lot of decrepit Santa Fe hippies sport the shaman look, amulets and headbands with mystical Zuni designs. They walk around looking high on peyote, searching for a sweat lodge to have a vision quest. Then you see them step into a Prius with Apple logos beside the Coexist bumper sticker. It's nutty and quintessential Santa Fe. Part of the allure of the Santa Fe vicinity is the famed Turquoise Trail. It's about a 50-mile stretch of two-lane blacktop that runs between Santa Fe and Albuquerque. The main attraction is a town called Madrid, which has had several incarnations. First, it was a coal mining town. When that ended, it became a ghost town, a true ghost town. No velvet ropes or docents or admission fees or snack bars. Just a dozen or two abandoned wooden shacks with tin roofs. Doors hanging on one hinge, swinging in the desert wind. A pint bottle of Thunderbird here or there so you know vagrants use them as crash pads. It was a little creepy. Somewhere around the early 90s, I visited again. And then, a few of those shacks were repaired and painted. But then it was even creepier because almost all of them had satanic iconography on the doors. Inverted crosses, pentagrams, silhouettes of Baphomet, shit like that. If you asked around, people would tell you that it was a Satanist enclave. Now Madrid has become a destination, especially with bikers, probably due to the fact that a movie was partially filmed there, Wild Hogs with Tim Allen and John Travolta. That movie started off good, but soon degenerated into goofy crap, as so many do. They've even altered the pronunciation of the name. It's no longer Madrid. Now they're calling it Madrid. Who knows why? If you like stress and congestion and fights over parking spaces, be sure to stop there. We passed it by and instead lingered at a far better place, Cerrillos. There's not much there. The Blackbird Saloon, a couple of shops, a beautiful 100-year-old church. Unfortunately, it was locked. When did that start? As a kid, every church was open 24/7. No doubt the Satanists have multiplied. Near the church, I had a talk with a local who told me it was Californians who fucked up Santa Fe and most of New Mexico. He said there had been a massive influx from L.A. and San Francisco, and of course, they brought their politics with them. He was undoubtedly correct. I stopped in a general store. The people were nice, and on a table was an array of handmade knives. I was a knife guy before I was a gun guy. Actually, I'm still more of a knife guy because I carry one, use one every day, and they never run out of ammo. I have a nice set of Wusthof cutlery someone gave us as a wedding gift. And whenever I make my famous stew, which entails cutting 10 or 12 pounds of steak or chicken and bushels of turnips and carrots and rutabagas and golden and red potatoes, I always curse the Wusthofs because, while the blades are pretty good, the handles suck. Use one for an hour or two straight. You'll see what I mean. You see tons of custom knives in Santa Fe. They all look like jewelry. These handmade knives had a tag with a slogan that said, quote, "Custom knives meant to be used," unquote. Well, a fitting blurb. The knives were certainly custom. Each was unique, but they were not ornate. They have Damascus-style steel and stiff leather sheaths so well fitted that the knife would pop in and no need to strap or snap to hold it in. I hefted 8 or 10 until one had perfect balance and felt as if it was molded from my hand. I never buy souvenirs, but this one was irresistible. Can't wait to see how it performs on my next stew. Or kami. The biggest draw of Cerrillos is the Casa Grande Trading Post and Mining Museum. The zoo is goofy. A couple of llamas and some chickens. But the store is a trip. Dozens of tables with all kinds of stuff. Not just the obligatory silver and turquoise, but boxes of water buffalo teeth. Yeah, they were real. Rusty railroad spikes, fossils, amethyst and quartzite, and so on. My kids loved it. Next stop, Tucumcari. We've been through Tucumcari a few times, and I'm sorry to report that it seems closer to extinction than before. Its claim to fame is a handful of retro businesses that survived the advent of Interstate 40, which transformed Route 66 from, as Steinbeck called it, the Mother Road to the Forgotten Road. After Tucumcari, we shot across the Texas Panhandle with just a stop for lunch in Amarillo at a joint called Smoky Joe's. It was in the hipster end of town. Lots of thrift stores and art galleries and honky-tonks. The chow at Smoky Joe's was surprisingly good. As we ate lunch, I watched a musician set up his gear for an afternoon set. He was clearly a regular feature there. He knew just where the electrical outlets were and how to position his PA system and so on. He had about a half dozen foot pedals and a nice Les Paul in natural wood. I was eager to hear him do his thing, but then he cued the backing track, and I lost all interest. After an overnight in Elk City, a really nice town, we continued through Oklahoma with a stop in Arcadia to have a look at their big attraction, the Round Barn. Why round? Damned if I know. It was built in 1898. Just when we arrived, a hell of a storm began, with fork lightning and torrential rain blowing sideways. We holed up in the barn for over half an hour, waiting for the weather to improve. My wife and kids got bored and ventured into the gift shop. I didn't see it, but they said it sold some tchotchkes and vintage clothes. My younger daughter bought a slightly used pair of jeans for $3. Apparently, the gift shop was rather dimly lit. When she examined the jeans under the bright lights of our hotel later that evening, she made a repulsive discovery. Those retro jeans had a retro and massive piss stain at the crotch. It was bright yellow. She quickly pitched the jeans into a garbage can as I exhorted her with my favorite Latin phrase, caveat emptor. Should you ever visit the Round Barn, be sure to avoid the gift shop. People visiting the dwindling number of towns along 66 do so to look back in time to another America a healthier, happier America, an America that wasn't self-loathing and self-destructing, an America with a waistline that measured half what it does today, an America that ran on optimism and high-octane gas, not antidepressants and lowered expectations, an America that reached for the stars, not a handout from the government, an America that put American families first, not trespassers from other countries, an America that lived in neighborhoods with neighbors of any race or religion. The new America doesn't like neighborhoods. It prefers communities where everyone can be tribalized by race, religion, and sexual orientation and assured they are both superior and underprivileged. In the new America, Lady Justice's blindfold has been replaced by goggles that enable her to apply the law based on protected class or political party. MLK must be spinning in his grave. Were he alive today, the new America would horrify him. Then it would vilify him. We haven't just gone backwards. We're descending into the sewer. If you're curious to experience some Route 66 nostalgia, don't delay. Soon, the few remaining outposts trying to preserve the former America will evaporate like a puddle after a sun shower. The most common figure in Route 66 lore is Elvis Presley. You see his likeness everywhere, painted on walls of 50s-era diners, as a mannequin at the wheel of two-tone convertibles. Some years back, his widow, Priscilla, sold the rights to his estate for something like $100 million. People thought that was too cheap a price, that she should have waited. But maybe she was smart to sell when she did. It's said that in his day, Rudy Valley was as popular as Elvis. Does anyone know who Rudy Valley was? In the not-too-distant future, all those who lived in the classic America that's archived on Route 66, well, they'll be gone. Will that America be as forgotten as Rudy Valley and traditional American values? Only time will tell. A strong culture preserves its own history. New America destroys its past, tearing down statues of war heroes and leaders that don't conform to the tenets of New America. An activity taken straight from Marx and Mao. A new future isn't enough. They must erase the past. The reason they do it is obvious. While America's past wasn't perfect, it was exponentially better than the hellscape some of it has become. As I travel across the country, the migration is obvious. U-Haul and Penske trucks are everywhere as traditional families flee commie stronghold cities and states. The new America will be more polarized, more divided. The abbreviation USA might be replaced by SSA, the Separated States of America. Let the hive-minded, which I call ASTCOs, that's assholes seeking to control others, let them do their thing in their zones of regulation and obedience. Let the freedom-loving free thinkers, which I call LUTFAs, that's leave us the fuck alone, live their lives with their nuclear families, gas stoves and automobiles, churches and schools that educate, not indoctrinate. I'd say we'd all be a lot happier, but that would be inaccurate because ASTCOs are never happy. They're always scowling and pissed off. Churchill called socialism the gospel of envy, but he was only partially right. In America, there are many, many very rich lefties, and they're seething inside their limos and mansions. Look at the images of their leaders. Marx, Lenin, Stalin, Mao, every face has similar expressions. Malevolence, anger, hatred. Compare those with portraits of the founders. Ben Franklin looks like he's suppressing a laugh. Washington and Jefferson look as peaceful as saints. People wear their politics on their faces, and you can see it as you move from state to state. There's no question about it. Those in ASCO states tend to be more sullen, angry, and rude. You want smiles and goodwill? Try Lutva zones. It's a stone fact, and I've seen it over many thousands of miles. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. And thank you for all your support and good health wishes from Moose. I'm sorry my shows have been posting late. It's tough getting them done on the road. I'll be posting updates and pictures from the road. You can see them at thatlarryshow.com, like shots of that round barn. Check out Facebook and my new Twitter account. Just enter the number 2 followed by That Larry Show in the search bar, and you'll see me and the Take No Shit Dojo logo. I'd be grateful if you'd follow me there as well. I don't like Twitter, but presence there is kind of necessary for the show to grow. Stop by thatlarryshow.com for hundreds more episodes and links to PayPal and Patreon if you want to help support the show, and I hope you do. I'll see you next Wednesday or thereabouts, and until that time, from the road, take no shit.